Chairs No Waiting, episode number 703, Yesterday USA Interview of Randy Turner, part two. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Head over to Weavers and check out all the Mayberry items they have there, including the 2023 monthly wall calendar. That's right, the Andy Griffith Show monthly wall calendar. Head over there at Weavers and get you a copy. Get them before they're gone. While you're there, you might want to check out the 2023 Mayberry Day-by-Day Flipbook Calendar as well by Randy Turner. Head over there at Weavers and check out both of these calendars. I know you would love them. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations of listeners just like you. The executive producer of this episode, episode number 703, are the Mayberry Meetup folks. So thank all of you who attended the Mayberry Meetup and participated in the silent auction and the drawings and raffles to help pay for the podcast. We appreciate that. If you'd like to help out with the podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/twochairs and you can join us there as well. If you forget that, just head over to twochairsnowaiting.com. All the information's right on the side. Hey everybody, I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting. Well, I'm normally the host. I'm kind of just the intro guy this week, as we're going to be hearing from Randy Turner. This is an interview he did. This is part two. So if you didn't listen last week, go check it out with Yesterday USA. It's hosted by Walden Hughes. And so you want to check that out. And it's got Patricia and Dan also on there. This is back in May of 2022. They interviewed Randy Turner. And in part two, you're going to be hearing some about the importance of music in the Andy Griffith Show, Gomer and Goober Pyle's Facebook group, the Gomer and Goober Pyle, the group that Randy runs. You'll hear all about that. Two Chairs No Waiting podcast. Hey, that's us. The influence of old time radio. Cast members that are still living, why Don Knotts left the Andy Griffith Show, and the mistreatment or how Jack Burns, Warren, was treated on the show, and why the series ended. Randy's going to cover all kinds of great information. So let's head on over to hear from Walden Hughes and Randy Turner and Patricia and Dan as they bring us some more Mayberry fun. And we'll see you right after it's over. See you in a little bit. Thanks, Randy. Take it over.
Essential part of the show.
Well, you know, Andy loved music, and yeah, you're exactly right. When they weren't performing, a lot of times Andy had a guitar on set, and they would play in between, you know, while they're setting up the cameras. The makeup man on that show was named Lee Greenway, and he was a good banjo player, and he and Andy became very close. I mean, they were really dear friends, you know, even away from the set. But yeah, it was a constant, you know, I think that's one of the reasons people enjoyed working on the show so much. I know.
Well, even in the third show, they brought in James Best, Jim Lindsay. And, that was, centered around music.
It sure was. I'm sure you're aware that was not actually Jim Best playing the guitar. When they asked him if he could play, he said, "Well, I've got two guitars.
Exactly.
Jimmy, he was a great guy. He really was. He passed But yeah, you're
it's
right.
Been 5 years now.
Yeah. But he just, you're right. Music was very central, and really Earl Hagen, the music, you know, the regular music that was on there. They just did a masterful job with it, and I think that helps make the show continue to be popular as well. I certainly love those episodes.
Yeah, Jimmy was from my hometown.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's such a nice man.
Yeah.
Well, then I will say too, in season one, they had another band that played. It was the episode where a record producer came to town, and Andy at first was helpful, but he became convinced he was a con man. And of course, he was not. He was on the up and up. And then later on, that same band appeared at that little epilogue, you know, the tag ending on Quiet Sam. But at the time, that band was called the Country Boys. But they eventually named the Kentucky Colonels, and they are also in the International Bluegrass Hall of Fame. So, yeah, they knew what they were doing. They had some great people in there for sure.
Exactly. I have to mention that as we were talking about the music and the musicians, a question came in from Ted that the music added so much to the episodes they were in, and he wanted to know all of the information that you already gave us. Thank you, Ted, for contacting me.
You know, this is frustrating. I'll add this because Ted may not be aware of this, but if you look at the running time of those episodes, and the first episode when they came to town called "The Darlings Are Coming," they've cut one of the songs out and cut several scenes a little bit. I don't really know why they did that, but that's even true on the DVDs. Or if you watched it on Amazon or whatever, how you would stream it. They cut some out. I really don't understand why.
Have you seen the shows on Pluto? Phone app. Are those full episodes or are they edited?
No, I think they're fuller. I'll put it that way. I mean, I've not watched it exclusively because I've got them all on Blu-ray and DVD, etc. But they always show the little tag ending on the Pluto when you watch it. There's always like a little scene at the very end that kind of...
The epilogue, yes. Usually the epilogue's been cut out, you know, since the 80s. I mean, that's
in syndication. In syndication, it often has. And if they don't, and if they do the epilogue, they cut something else out, you know, and it's, you know, they're squeezing more commercials in, which is frustrating. But the other thing about Pluto TV, and don't misunderstand me, it's a wonderful resource. At least you can see it. When you get used to streaming, it's harder to only watch what's there. You can't just go to, you know, a particular episode you want to watch. But they, I believe Pluto TV does this, but they show it the way it was syndicated. And when the show was syndicated originally, they actually would air the shows in syndication in the order they were filmed, not the order they were aired. And they'll often pull them out of order. And I remember that very clearly, seeing like an episode where Gomer enlists in the Marines and 2 weeks later back, you know, that's because they filmed the pilot, you know, it was the 10th episode, but they held it off and didn't air it until the 32nd. And so you know, it was very, very confusing really, but there aren't that many times, you know, it's very rare for that show to have a reference to a previous episode. I mean, there is in the color year, they did a 3-season arc where the Taylors went to Hollywood. And, you know, there is the guitar player does come back at the end of season one, you know, but that's pretty unusual. Usually the shows are pretty standalone.
That's right. So did you first work on the Facebook page where you have the tribute to Gomer and Goober? And could you explain a little bit about that to people who are not on Facebook?
Sure.
I've been trying to encourage Patricia to go on Facebook, but this Gomer and Goober tribute might do it.
You're not really missing that. You're not missing that much, Patricia, from Facebook.
Tell her the name of the page. The name of the page alone will get her.
Yeah, it's called the Gomer and Goober Pile Comic Book Literary Guild. So
I love that. I love that.
I announced at Mayberry Days. I'm not quite sure what inspired me to do it, but I announced out loud that in 2017, I was going to try to post something every day about the show, but not a random fact. That would not be that hard to do. It would have to be something tied to that day. So, you know, if it was June the 5th, it was something that happened on June the 5th, you know, like throughout the entire year. And I did that for all of that year. So the next year, I released, I guess, let's see, I guess 2019 might have been the first one I did. Of course, I wrote it in 18. And I released the desk calendar, which is like a flip calendar. And I still do those every year, too. And there, I call it the Mayberry Day-by-Day calendar. And there's a fact, you know, every day of the year, but they're not random facts. They actually are tied to that date. And a friend of mine and I, you know, from work set that Facebook page up. And I would say for 7 or 8 years, we had about 80 people in it, maybe, you know, just people we knew, you know, and we didn't post in it that regularly. But by the end of that year, we had, you know, close to 3,000 people. We've got getting close to 5,000 right now, but I will tell you, we're pretty picky about the group. I would wager we we deny more people than we let in all the time because we don't want any. We want it to be just the Andy Griffith Show, no politics, just the Andy Griffith Show. And so we try to be careful at who we let in. And if somebody kind of violates those rules, then I just, they're out. You know, it's not a democracy, unfortunately. So I always say, if you want to gripe about Helen or the color episodes or whatever, there are other places on the internet to do that. But, you know, please agree not to do it here. And it's a really good group. I think we've got a good core, bunch of fans on that group.
How do people find that group?
Well, if you go to Facebook, if you just type in Gomer and Goober, that's all you'll have to type in. It'll pop right up. So I will warn you, we have a group and a page. And if you look at the page, it says very boldly at the top, this is a mirror site for more of a community atmosphere. Go to the group. So I try to post stuff on the page too, but really the group's where everybody goes. So. Mm-hmm.
And after you started working on the calendar, then you started contributing to Alan Newsom's Two Chairs No Waiting podcast.
Yeah, I don't recall the name of who did this. So I remember I sent him a free book as thanks when it started, but some fan this is the beginning of 2017, a few of the entries I had planned to start posting daily. Partially just hoping Alan would give it a little bit of a shout out on his podcast. But, I didn't want him to do it blindly. I wanted him to know I was trying to do quality writing and it's not, you know what I mean? That it wasn't just junk. And after I did that, somebody else contacted him and said, you ought to have Randy, do something on the show every week, talk about the history of the show. So he reached out to me about doing it. And, I started doing that. I think I didn't do it the first week, but starting the second week of 2017. And until this past February, I did them every week, just, every so often I'd miss a week. Like he would take Christmas off. He would always do a particular episode or a certain Halloween episode. But I think I've done 255 of them, and they're called This Week in Mayberry History. And they're basically character, like little... people that were on the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every so often I'll do something a little bit different from that, but I'm doing one about Hal Smith right now. And I took a bit of a sabbatical and another guy started doing some reports as well. And so I'm back doing some, but yeah, I'm just going to be doing a part-time from now on, but I did it pretty much every week for 5 years.
I am amazed at the facts that you put in they average about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I try not to go any more than six. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But tie in if they had any connection to old time radio, I mean, you just nail it. I mean,
no, I always try to, I'm a big fan of OTR, and I always tell people, I like a lot of the shows, but I'm always like, if you like the Andy Griffith Show, for goodness sake, listen to Lum and Abner a little bit. Just try it. I mean, it's clearly influenced by that show a lot. And in that season, some of the storylines are even kind of lifted from Lemon Abner. So,
And then, characters like Howard McNair, I mean, he was on so many, series of, old time radio shows.
Well, he was still voicing Doc until about, I think, toward the end of the first season before Gunsmoke ended on radio. So he was doing double duty. He was Howard. It was Floyd the Barber on the show, and he was still Doc on Gunsmoke. Yeah, Parley Bear had a regular on Gunsmoke, and he came in and played a character for a year. But there's just so many of them, And I always try to bring that up. When I do those reports, I don't want to just be I looked at Wikipedia and here's something I read. So I talk about I look at radio databases and Broadway databases and just try to find a more true picture of what their career was. But yeah, old time radio contributed so many great, and not just to the Andy Griffith Show. Those character actors were on a lot of different shows, and they were good, and they were solid, and they were dependable. And so you'll see a lot of them come back, and they're playing different characters. Sam Edwards, he must have played five or six different characters on the show at different times.
Exactly.
And what a great actor, you know. But that is true. A lot of people from old time radio, they were fantastic actors.
They were. And they were able to do things vocally, I think, you know, just they weren't reliant on, the visual medium. I mean,
well, theater and so the mind, practice. Yeah.
Exactly.
I always enjoy, because when I listen to certain ones, at least, I always like to listen to the credits, because so often there's an actor, and I had not realized who it was because they just modulated their voice so differently. When I spoke at Missouri Cherry Blossom Festival, I did a presentation on connections between the Walt Disney Productions and the Andy Griffith, because Disney spent his formative years in Missouri. And one of the example I gave, you see Sam Edwards in the Christmas Story episode, and he's the voice of Bambi's father, in Bambi. I mean, you hear that voice, you're like, is that Sam Edwards? Yeah, it is. He was an actor. He could do that voice.
Makes you do a double take. I've heard that voice. Yeah. Where did I hear that voice? Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you another favorite example of mine. There's an episode, and this happened more than once, where Barney is convinced that Andy needs a wife. So he invites a woman over so Andy can have somebody to choose from. And I believe she's the first girl that comes in, a very attractive blonde. And she sits down. And, at some point he's got this whole room full of women. And Andy's telling him, you got to get these women out of here. Mm-hmm. And then he says something to the effect of, I want to, tell you why we're here. And then this particular girl pipes us, well, why are we here? And if you know at all and you listen, it is so clear that's the voice of Judy Jetson. That's
really wow.
Oh yeah, of course she did a lot of old time radio as well. But there's just so many wonderful people involved in that show, and the acting. And a lot of times I mentioned Ron Howard, for example, and this is not a knock against the other show. Sheldon Leonard, who created the Andy Griffith Show, also produced the Dick Van Dyke Show. And I said, Rob and Laura's kid, he was in the bedroom a lot. They had a son, but he was on screen. That much, Ronnie Howard could hold his own with those actors. I mean, he could really act from such a young age. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly good. But yeah, their guest stars were always great. And another thing that a lot of fans don't always notice, but they, in the background, if you're watching like an outdoor scene, it would have been very easy and cheaper, I'm sure, just to have the main characters. But no, you'll see people back in the back, mowing their grass or walking by hand in hand, and I sometimes leave to see they're talking, and you'll see a person's reflection walk by and, on glass on Main Street. And it that helps make it seem like a real town, even though it's really just, a bunch of facades on the backlot, but it makes the town seem real. There's another example I like to use. It's actually in you mentioned it, the one with Jimmy, the guitar player, and they actually decorated. This was very rare, but the inside of there were only two buildings on that whole thing that were actual buildings that had a roof, and they dressed one of them as a diner. So you see the shot from inside the diner where Bobby Fleet, his band with the beat, are getting ready to eat. And through the glass, you can see Andy and Barney start to cross the street. That alone makes it seem like a real town. But before they cross the street, they have to pause and a white car drives by. Then they cross the street. And it just seems like, it just seems real. And they easily shot that on a soundstage, just had them walk in, but it just makes it seem like a real town. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And back to Disney.
I was really close to Janet Waddle, and she was just a wonderful person. I'm just curious, Randy, have you sat down and figured out how many people are still around from the show? Maybe a guest shot or behind the scene. Have you ever done a running count who's still with us?
Yeah. At the risk of sounding like a commercial, I also have a club that I started called the Andy Griffith Show Ambassadors Program. And as part of that, I give people a certificate that is done like on 100-pound weight linen paper with an embossed gold seal, kind of declaring them, because they've adhered to the principles of the show, They're hereby named an ambassador of the Andy Griffith Show. And I publish a little in-house magazine just for people that are ambassadors. And every issue, I list 10 people that are still with us. And so I've been doing this, I think I'm about on the 10th issue. The only one I didn't do that in, when Betty Lynn passed away, I made hers kind of a memorial issue. But I've been doing 10 people every issue for at least 9 or 10 episodes or issues. So we're up to 100 people at that point. And I've still got another at least 2 issues to go. So it's probably about 120, I'm guessing.
Wow.
But Walden, really, there's probably more than that, because a lot of the child actors, if they didn't stick with it, there's just no information about them, you know. Yeah. And probably they're still alive, but I can't really verify it.
Oh, that's, you know, that's part of the thing I do for Old Time Radio. I'm always digging, looking for contacts. Yes. And thank God for the internet. But it's just, you're right, Randy. And things keep popping up, you know, over the years. So
I hear so many people, you know, I'm sure you hear the same kind of thing, but I hear it all the time. Like, well, there's nobody left other than Ron Howard. I'm like, well, that's not true. Ron was a lead. That's true.
Right.
But, you know, I mentioned Charlene, Maggie Peterson still with us, Rodney Dillard. I mean, there's like I said, about 120 of them still with us. And more than that, really, like I said, I just can't find the information about, I know some of those other child actors undoubtedly are still alive, but I just can't find the information. So.
Well, Keith Thibodeau is alive too. I mean,
absolutely. You know,
he's been around and,
That's a good example. We were talking earlier about the work atmosphere on the Andy Griffith Show. Keith has, you know, I think most people, well, the casual fan might not know, but Keith on the Andy Griffith Show was Opie's buddy, Johnny Paul Jason. But Johnny Paul was who on the Andy Griffith Show, but he was Little Ricky on I Love Lucy. Sure. And he has talked about what a fun atmosphere the Andy Griffith Show was. I'm sure part of that was he had Ron Howard, who was around his age, you know, to play with. And but I think just to some of the tensions at that point between Lucy and Desi, and he was witness to some of them, and he was actually good friends with the family and with their kids. And he's spoken about that quite a bit, but he said, well, you know, the Andy Griffith Show was just a different atmosphere, you know.
I know a good example to verify that. I was really close to Gloria McMillan, who of course she was Harriet Armit Brooks. And the Armit Brooks TV cast are right on the same, right, Lucy, and a lot of Lucy people would just come over to the Armit Brooks cast get to hang out, because they just didn't want to be around the tension that was over there.
Right.
So
I'll mention too, when I mentioned about all those background people that you would see on the show, there's a man named Bruce Bilson. He was the assistant director the first 2 seasons and went on to direct a lot of things himself and won an Emmy, as far as that goes, for an episode of Get Smart. But he wrote a section of a book that I published that he wrote an essay for it. But he was very good about this. So what a lot of times when you would see people and you would see them every week in the background, those were people that were on the Desilu payroll. So they would shoot the Andy Griffith Show on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays. And then on Thursday, Friday, they'd go over and be on I Love Lucy. And that way they got to work all 5 days that week and get a full paycheck.
Nice.
So he would use us a lot just in the background to keep them working, you know. So
I'd like to hop in here. I just got an email wanting to know if the show is live tonight. And yes, the show is live on Thursday, really? May 12th. Well, you know, they are recorded, you know. So, yes, I am. I don't know about you.
I'm alive.
You are alive. It is May 12th, 2022, Thursday night, and we are talking with Randy Turner, who is a resident expert on the Andy Griffith Show and Mayberry RFD. And I'm backed up with my questions here. I want to know what happened when Don Knotts left the show. Barney Fife was such a critical character in the success of that show. Why did he leave, and what happened that changed the show so dramatically? What happened to the show?
Well, first of all, the reason he left is I told you earlier, he came out originally with no contract, but then he got extended to 5, and that's what Andy Griffith decided. The idea was they were going to do 5 years and be done with it, which is what they did on the Dick Van Dyke Show, 5 seasons. But then at the end, you know, it was, and it's understandable at that point, you know, shows had a sponsor and it was General Foods. So you would often see commercials for either Sanka or Post cereals or Jell-O, but they did not want the show to end. It was a very popular show. It never left the top 10. It stayed in the top 10, you know, every season. And then of course they spun off Gomer Pyle, USMC, and that stayed in the top 10. And so they didn't want it to end. And without being too crass, they basically just gave Andy so much money, he agreed to stay another three seasons. So he signed another three-year extension. And when they went to Don Knotts to do that, well, Don didn't know that that was, you know, being talked about. And he had already been exploring a possible film career. While on hiatus, he had filmed The Incredible Mr. Limpet for Warner Brothers. And that a big, you know, popular movie, both with children and adults alike. And so he had reached out and had been in negotiations with Universal to sign a 5-picture deal. You'll often see on the internet that they will say the reason he didn't come back was he couldn't. He had signed an agreement with Universal. That's not correct. He had not actually signed anything. He could have stayed, but he had made a commitment to them. And quite frankly, he wanted to try his hand at movies. You know, The Incredible Mr. Limp had been a success and he wanted to try it. So he, that's what he did. You'll often see two stories that say that, you know, he and Andy had a falling out over it. That is not true at all. The first film he made for Universal was The Ghost and Mr. Chicken. And that script, when he got it, he thought it was weak. He sent it to Andy. Andy said, I agree it's weak. And Andy spent 2 weeks helping them punch that script up. Again, he took no credit as a writer. He never took any credit as a writer on all of these. But he spent 2 weeks helping his friend, you know, get the script up. Uh-huh. And so they remained good friends. And, of course, Don Knotts came back for guest appearances in the color years. He came back twice in season 6 and 7, once in season 8. And they would apparently tease him quite a bit. Oh, the movie stars come back. You know? yeah, they remain good friends. And then, you know, initially they thought, well, we need to do some type of a replacement when they knew Don was leaving. They had an episode that Don Rickles appeared in as a traveling salesman that seems to have been kind of an audition of sorts. I've never been able to find any verification that they, you know, that was it. But it seemed like that maybe is what they were looking at. And then in the final black and white episode, which Don Knotts was not even in that one, they had Jerry Van Dyke. And it's called Banjo Playing Deputy. He plays a friend of the son of a friend of Aunt B who passes through town. Uh-huh. You know, and they did offer him that part to be the new deputy. And in a pretty amazing story that he didn't want to be part of an ensemble. So he turned it down and he took the lead in My Mother, the Car, which is generally considered maybe the worst sitcom ever produced. So it didn't work out too well, but he did okay with Coach eventually, obviously. But so they brought in Jack Burns, a comedian who had started with George Carlin as a partner. And then eventually he had with Avery Schreiber had a comedy act. And I've always felt bad for Jack. He just passed away not all that long ago because he did exactly what he was asked to do. But they just did not, you know, those, if you watch them, they're a little bit painful to watch. It seems like they were still writing for Barney. They literally had him say nippet. He was literally, you know, overzealous about regulations. There's a lot of, and that's not Jack Burns' fault. He was doing a fine job. They realized the importance of it. Sheldon Leonard, who created the show, also directed the pilot. The only other episode he directed, he came back and directed the first episode with Jack Burns, realizing the importance of it. But, you know, it just didn't work. And, you know, Jack was gone by Christmas. And then
he did 13 episodes, right?
That's right. He was in there about half the season. Mm-hmm. And he went on and he co-wrote the Muppet movie. He had a great career, but I've always felt bad for him. I think he got a bad rap he didn't deserve. But, you know, people, there are a lot of people that say, I'm a fan of the Andy Griffith Show, but I'll only watch the black and white ones. And so my response is always, well, you're not really a fan of the Andy Griffith Show. You're a fan of the Andy Griffith Show, you know. I will be the first to say the color episodes, no, they're not as strong as the Don Knotts years. There's, you know, you can't argue that. But there's still a lot of good stuff in there if people give them a chance. They really are quite a movie in it. And from the public's perception, the public, you know, at the, you that the Andy Griffith Show was in essence a form of respite. None of this appears in Mayberry, but in real life, Vietnam was raging. There was civil unrest. There were people rioting. There was racism, you know, but not in Mayberry. You know, it was kind of an oasis from that. Part of the reason I said it's evergreen, they didn't make any reference to that kind of thing. And I think that's part of the reason it's probably still so popular. It's just a nice little break to go visit a town where everybody seems to love one another.
Yeah. But
public did not, you know, people think, well, those episodes weren't as good. I said earlier the show never left the top 10. That is true, but its final season, it was the number one show in the United States. So clearly the public wasn't bothered by it. They were still watching it in droves. Only three series went off the air, number one of the Nielsens, and it was The Andy Griffith Show, I Love Lucy, and Seinfeld. And so, yeah, the show was still very popular, and when they rebooted it as Mayberry RFD, it stayed in the top 10 its first two seasons. But the third season, it did drop. It was still respectable enough that it was going to be renewed. But Fred Silverman, people started calling the, not so much the Andy Griffith Show, but there was, you know, Petticoat Junction and the Beverly Hillbillies and Green Acres, all the Paul Henning, you know, universe. And there was Lassie. And so people, instead of the Columbia Broadcasting System, they said CBS, that for the Country Broadcasting System. And so Fred Silverman came in 1971 and in one fell swoop took them all off the air all at once. So it's usually
the year they killed every show with a tree in it.
That's what the guy that played Mr. Haney said. That's right. And they called that their rural purge.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks, Randy. Wow. What a great man. The rural purge that went on, man, I couldn't believe they cut all those amazing shows from CBS, but they did. So, wow. This is great information. And I want to thank Randy Turner so much for being here with us this week and last week and next week, as he's helping fill in for me. And I really appreciate it while I'm off filming the Mayberry Man, the series that's out, plus Mayberry Days. Mayberry Days is this week, so we'll be enjoying that by the end of the week. So hopefully I'll see you there. And we get to look forward to part three, the final wrap-up portion of this interview with Randy, next week. So I hope you're going to enjoy that. Folks, it is always wonderful to have you here in Mayberry with me and spend time with Randy in this case. But it's always good to just spend time talking about the Andy Griffith Show and enjoying ourselves. I would love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415, or you can email me at floyd@imayberry.com, or head over to twochairsnowaiting.com and leave a message. We'd love to hear from you. It's always fun. Tell Randy how good a job he's doing. We'll play these in future episodes when we have a feedback episode. So, folks, have a great Mayberry week, and we'll see you back next week right here for part three of this interview with Randy Turner. Good night, everybody.